necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Menace the stars. Let the video gatherings give them never a blow. On the Superhuman Radio website. I am actually in the studio, something very rare for me to do, but I'm actually in the studio with my guest today, and he is none other than the famed author Brooks Cuba. How are you, Brooks?
How are you?
Great, great. And we're going to talk about something that should be important to everybody. I was at the Genesis when I came with my girlfriend, and I was talking to her about the idea that there's plenty of research out there that shows that the strongest individuals live the longest. Now, this could be because, as an organism, we know that as we get weaker, we can't sustain life any longer. We can't do the things we need to do so the body starts to wind down and gets ready for death. But we talked about a 2007 study that was done on quite a few, I want to say it was 26,000 individuals, men that they followed over a 20-year period, and what they determined was the strongest men lived the longest. And Brooks is one of the few modern-day keepers of physical culture, and he has written numerous books about strength training, his most popular book called Dinosaur Training, and we are reviewing a book right now that everybody needs to go out and get. It's called Chalk and Sweat. Dinosaur Training Workouts for Beginners, Intermediates, and Advanced Lifters. What an amazing book this is. I read through it last night, and it's got a bunch of great workouts in it. So I put the question to you, Brooks. When we look back at the days before drugs, especially before drugs, what was it that made some of these guys strong? You know, what did they have to be strength?
Heavy lifting at the
time. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The old-time guys, the really, really strong powerhouses from the past, you know, like Tom Grimmick, Louis Amelie, Steve Spender, John Davis, they had two things going for them. And in retrospect, what they were doing was a specialization program focusing on leg training and back training. The one thing that everybody did back then was Olympic weightlifting. Olympic weightlifting is pulling the bar from the platform to the shoulders and pushing it overhead. In those days, they did the clean and the no-throw pass, and then they also did the clean and the jerk. Today, we just did the clean and jerking competition. And it's pulling the bar to the shoulders and pushing it overhead. That's a pure back motion. Involves all of the posterior chain. The other exercise that we did as part of competition was the snatch, which is still done in Olympic lifting competition today. And the snatch again is a pull. It's a pull from the platform to straight arms overhead. So bang, instantaneously, the weight. And this would be a heavy weight. 250 pounds, 300 pounds, 400 pounds. All the way overhead, like it in literally 1 second. So what they were doing when they were training for the Olympic weightlifting was back specialization. And the other thing that they were doing, because it came into prevalence in the 20s and 30s, squats, which are, of course, the top, the number one leg hip exercise that no one can do, number one.
Okay, so you say that the key to great strength is back and leg strength, and so I mean, that's really my attention.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody is thrown with that matter of getting in good condition, that's developing a particular look and effect, if you will. But if you're focused on total body strength and power, I'm talking about his ferocious strength and power, you're looking at the legs, the hips, the back. Those are the power groups.
Interesting. Now, in the book Chalk and Sweat, you actually discuss the idea of specialization training for the back and for the leg. But before we get into that, tell me about Grimmick and was it Grimmick or Adler who said that when he trained back so hard, and I read this in your book, that his teeth hurt. And I know his teeth didn't hurt, but he was trying to emphasize the amount of energy that was put forth.
But Louis Adler from Philadelphia was a powerhouse weightlifter, 5'9", 220, 225, solid muscle, right before steroids, before food supplements, that's just good for him and a lot of
information. Homegrown muscle.
Homegrown muscle. Now, if you think about it, I mean, how many top bodybuilding stars today can pack 5'9", 220 solid muscle?
I don't know anything.
I mean, that's just phenomenal. That was huge. And what he did was relatively high rep back training, leg training, breathing squats.
I don't know what that is. I've heard about them for years. What is breathing squat?
Breathing squat is a heavy, high rep squat. Usually 20 reps, sometimes 25, sometimes 30, but 20 is the standard. And what you do is you take one breath after the first rep, two breaths after rep number two, three after number three, four after number four, five after number five, and then it's five enormous deep breaths in between each rep.
Yeah,
and these are not just shallow reps, but shallow breaths where you bend over and you just kind of take a little bit of air in. It's a concentrated focus, raising the
weight. It's raising the weight, actually, as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. You're almost doing a heavy shrug.
Right. Now, wasn't it true, I read in Muscle Smoke and Mirrors, Randy wrote that book, that someone was against breathing spots back then. Was it Terry Rowe that was against them, or was it Bob Hoffman that was against them, or someone else?
It was Bob Hoffman.
Yeah.
Hoffman was the United States Olympic weightlifting coach. He was afraid, as many times were back then, he was afraid that the heavy spots would swell the lifters up.
Mm-hmm.
And speed is preeminent in the weightlifting. So he discouraged his lifters from doing the spots. But interestingly, the top lifters of the era started doing them on their own. Now, one of them was John Davis, who went on to become probably the greatest weightlifter of the first half of the century. He started doing those heavy squats after he was overseas in 1938. He saw the European champions, and he saw a guy strong in the legs there. So he came back home and he started
squatting. Yeah. I think that's interesting that we do that a lot. We go to other countries, I can't remember his name or not, but he wrote a book, Big Beyond Belief, that was all about the Ukrainians or the Bulgarian weightlifters, how they used to go into the gym and they would lift, they do their heaviest lift and get out of the gym, and they would do that 15 or 20 times in a day, and he started doing this almost really exaggerated response, if you will. And that power between left, recovery, and so on. The breathing score sounds like a synchronized rest pause. You really have a specific amount of time that you're resting. You really are actually resting your breathing, with a great deal of weight on you. But it really is kind of like a rest pause.
That's absolutely true. In fact, when rest pause training was starting to become popular, Gary Rayner, who got popular as it in his magazine, Ironman, said, what this really is, it's an advanced form. It's similar to the breathing squats that we've been doing. Which have a rest pause built back,
right?
Some people who grew up doing breathing squats say, let's try it on other things, and that's how a rest pause built back.
All right, so here's another one. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we are going to start to talk more about back and leg specialization training. You can get a copy of Brooks Cuban's book, Chalk and Sweat. If you go to Brooks Cuban, it's BROOKSKUBIK.com. How much is this book?
$5.95
for shipping. It's a wonderful book. It's very, very, very through your library of books, training, check out their books, cubic.com. That's what we'll be talking about when we come back.
Specialization really come about?
really started in the 1930s, and it started through the articles written by a man called Mark Berry, who wrote for Strength Magazine. And what he urged leaders to do was to cut back from total body training and specialize on their legs and back, particularly their legs. And he was providing an exercise that very few people had done before, and that was the flat-footed squat.
What is that?
Well, it's what we now would refer to as parallel squat. It's different than a squat where you're up on your toes, which is what people have been doing before.
Oh, actually, you do squats on your toes?
Yeah, absolutely.
How the hell did you do that? You can't do anything with your weight, can you?
Well, if you go see the Natalie Portman Bill Lane movie, Black Swan, the dancers wrap around on the toes, and picture that with a barbell on your shoulders, not easy. In fact, it's not impossible, and you cannot do it in a heavy way.
Right.
Okay. So, there was a guy from Germany, Milo Steinborn, Henry Milo Steinborn, right before Reisner came over to the U.S. after the war, and he was doing flat-footed squats without squat stands. He would rock, he would stand the bar up on end, get over close to it, rock it underneath, squat down as the bar kind of lowered, levered onto his shoulders, and then stand up with it. Right? Incredible. And the U.S. workers saw that and they thought, what is he doing? And I also thought, gee, is that why he's so strong? Because he was a world record breaker. And he was just phenomenal.
Right?
Mark Berry saw that, and he said, the secret to Steinborn's success must be the squat exercise.
The way he was educated.
Yeah, so he was talking about it, which was great for him.
Yeah.
So, what happened then? He started writing about it, and the inventive Americans, because Americans have always been an incredibly inventive people.
Yes. Hopefully, we will be again.
You took the words out of my mouth. The inventive Americans said, you know what? That looks like a really good exercise, but there's an easier way to do it, and that is to put this big bar on some kind of stands. Okay, and so you have guys all around the country, guys training in their basement, their garage, or out in the back of the farm,
right?
And they build squat stands.
Right.
How many would they get, right? So now, for the first time in the United States, you have guys doing squats, and you have them doing them flat-footed, high reps,
flat stands,
with heavy weight. Because now you're not limited to what you can do on your shoulder. So, Homer, Illinois, little town in the farm country of Illinois, fairly close to Southern Illinois University. Homer, Illinois was a farm kid named Joe Huss, raised about 180 pounds. Been working hard, not demanding much in the way of results. He reads about the squat exercise. And it goes on a heavy eating, basically it's the seafood diet, anything you see,
right,
you eat.
And let's also say that back in those days, if you lived on a farm, you didn't have a lot of Hershey bars.
Absolutely.
And so he was eating the kind of food that you should eat if you want to build a muscle.
Absolutely. But he was eating the
raw dairy, beef, chicken, eggs, you know,
right, real food. Yeah, and it's all that food again.
Right.
So, he goes on that program, he goes on the squat program. And in 1 month's time, he gains 30 pounds of muscle.
Oh, man.
And this is crazy.
Right.
And he sends a letter to Mark Berry and says, Mr. Berry, I read your articles and I followed your program and boy, we're great.
Any chance that this was his height?
Berry didn't believe
it. Oh, thank you.
Berry did not.
The only one that didn't.
I said, absolutely not. And he said, well, wait a minute, I'll show you photos.
Right.
So he sends photos there. And the photos actually show this transformation,
right?
And there is a
gentleman. It actually be the very first before and after photo opportunity right there that he did. This is the 30s, you're
saying? This was the 30s. It was really the first.
Right.
And what it was the first transformation that was shown to people, and people said, wow.
Right.
And then they said, you know what? I want to do that.
Right.
And so you had guys from all across the country. He started doing this heavy weight specialization, the heavy squatting, the deep breathing. They really, you know, they stopped doing curls, presses, parallel exercises. They just really busted their you know what on those heavy squats,
right?
And they grew like crazy.
And when we first same thing glutes grow, or did their whole bodies
grow? Everything, right? That was the amazing thing. The interesting thing about this, the fascinating thing, is that the way you grow your upper body is to work your legs. To work your legs really, really hard with a lot of deep breathing, because it builds the size of your chest. It increases your rib cage. That means your shoulders get wider. And then, when you go back to your well-balanced program, you start training that upper body. It's fertile ground. And that's what happened. And they suddenly, you know, back in the 30s, people were not as big as they are. But my grandfather worked in the steel mill. He was the foreman of the steel mill. He was one of the strongest guys in the neighborhood. He had 160 pounds.
Right.
That was plenty of smaller than
me. Right.
And if you go even further back, if you look at armor, suits of armor, you and I could never get into one of those things, because most of those people were like near midgets compared to what people are doing.
That's it. Right. And I was actually at the airport yesterday, and I picked someone up, and I was looking at a historical display of colonial
clothing, right?
From colonial
slavery. I was thinking the same thing. I thought, I could never fit into that.
Right.
But in any event, so you had an era where if you win 150, 160, you're big.
Right.
You're big enough to play pro football. And suddenly, you had these guys gaining 40, 50, 60, 80, in some cases, 100 pounds, going up to 220, 240, 250, 260, 280. They were gigantic.
Right.
And people thought, wow, this is incredible. The other piece of the puzzle is a man named John Gronick. Okay. Gronick was the greatest bodybuilder of the first half of the century. Some would say the greatest bodybuilder of all time.
You know what? I look at Gronick and I don't think you can pluck him off of those pictures and put him on a stage today in a regional or national competition, and he would win. And there were no drugs back then.
No drugs and very basic training, just good healthy food,
right.
Basic training. And the interesting thing about Gronick, he lived with Mark Berry for a while. And actually, during one Christmas holiday, Barry had him switch from doing 10 reps in the squat to 20.
But he did a breathing approach?
He did a breathing approach. And the young John Gronick gained 10 pounds in 2 weeks. Solid muscle. And he maintained an incredibly small waist that you all see in the photos of John Gronick. And what happened, Joseph Fuss, for example, looked massive. But he did not have the classic V-shape for bodybuilding.
Right.
And that was true of many other of the weightlifters and counterweight guys. John Gronick had an incredible shape,
right.
And he got it from the heavy squatting program.
Right.
So he proved that the heavy squatting program not only worked for a weightlifter or a power-oriented guy, someone who wanted to get
better, but for him, it was aesthetically driven as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he got to the point where his thighs were almost so big set. But I wasn't there yet. I didn't even take my shot. They say his thighs were almost as big as his waist.
Wow.
Or his waist was almost as long as his thighs.
Yeah.
That's what I look at. It's very impressive.
So is it, are you of the opinion that if someone wants to get Herculean strength, that for a period of time they should focus on a leg specialization program?
Absolutely.
What is that period of time?
Well, it can be 6 to 12 weeks. And then what you do is you go back to a well-rounded program, and then you, after 6 to 8 weeks from that, you go back to your leg cycle. Or you can do less. You can alternate between leg specialization and back specialization.
Week to week?
No, 6 to 8 weeks, 12 weeks tops on one, and then 6 to 8 weeks, 12 weeks tops on the other.
How about this idea? So, we only have a couple minutes before we go into this break. So, are we saying that if I wanted to do this, because my idea is, I love training legs and back because that's where my greatest strength is and I feel the most productive. With that being said, so I'm going to abandon everything else except, say, squats and maybe leg presses and deadlifts. For 6 to 8 weeks, I wouldn't do any curls, any bench presses, any show the next time you go that video. But there's two ways you can do it. And most people are going to follow the second way. But the first way is you do nothing but the likes. You just focus on like you train them maybe 2 days a week, 3 days a week. You can train hard every day, or you can use a little like medium system. It's up to you. That's approach number one. Approach number two is 70 to 80% of your effort is on the legs, and you do one pressing exercise, one pulling exercise, throwing some curls, you know, just a little bit of the other touch up. Exactly. Yeah. And again, but it's a function of that. You do primarily two exercises, presses, overhead presses, and then the five-pound dumbbell, and it's light exercises.
Right. We're going to go ahead and take a commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about specialized training, especially as it relates to leg and back. We're going to have folks give us some examples, some ideas of the training program. If you can learn all of this, all of it, by just buying the book, Camp and Smart, under Brooks Cuban, B-R-O-O, and that's KDPIK.com. Get your copy today. Don't miss out. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
saying about the pennies and the dollars that come and stuff, but this would be specialized training for leg and back and making them strong. We really need to focus on leg. We may have to come back and do more show on back for those. Okay. And we also have some questions too. David Wilson posted on our Facebook that he definitely looks recommended adding weight to the bar. You recommend linear or very slight increases in weight. Should it be lifters stay awake for several weeks and then adding reps until that, you know, with that weight and then increase and so on and so forth? Do you have any opinions on that, Chris?
Well, it depends on what kind of set-up program you're talking about. If you're talking about the breathing squats, which are basically one set of 20 reps, what you do is you add a small amount of weight to the bar every workout or every other workout. Thinking as little as 10 pounds. Harry Rayner, the former publishing editor of Landman magazine, who was a huge fan of breathing squats, he has been building himself up from 120 pounds to about 200 pounds in a period of 2 years. He always said to add 5 pounds every workout. Not training twice a week.
That doesn't sound like a lot, but there becomes a point where that's really asking a lot of your body.
That's what I was going to say. That works really well for a long time. But I'm going to get that fixed, and then that's real heavy. And that's what I prefer us to do, what we call a bubble progression, where you stay at the same weight for 2 workouts, and then you add weight. It slows the process down. It's more of a slow prepping process, and that works well. But the other thing that works really well are the very small weight increases, the microloads.
The magnets, like you slap them. You can actually buy small weighted increments in magnets for the gym that have the steel plates. You slap them on. They're like 1 pound increments you can actually add to your bar if
you want. Absolutely. Or you can buy small plates. What I actually don't want to do is just try small pieces of chain that I'm looking in a little ring, a circle, time, and then just throw them in the bar.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But the point is, if you do the microloads, let's say you're using 150 pounds. You do your set of 20 reps, you time to work out. You don't want to come back and try to do 155 or 160. But if you do 151, you're saying you're going to next week, you do 151. Okay, a half pound point on each foot. You say, I can do 1 pound more. I got to be able to do 1 pound more. And so before I'm done, I'm finding anything else. So the microload approach is very useful.
That's what I was saying. If you have 1 pound a week, you're earning 52 pounds by the end of the year.
That's right.
That's not your thing.
And in 2 years, that's 100 pounds. Okay, if you're talking about going from 200 pounds for 20 reps to 300 pounds for 20 reps, that's where you go from being strong to being super strong.
Right. Or you start going snicker at a pound a week.
One of the other things I wanted to say about the breathing squat, the conventional wisdom that's been around, I guess, since the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, everybody parents it, is to take a weight that you can do 10 reps with and do 20.
Now, Mark, I've been telling you to do 20.
No. The way people always teach the program is to say, take a weight that you can do 10 with, but make yourself do 20
by using the breathing approach.
Is what everybody reads about, writes about, promotes, teaches. But I don't like it. It's too hard. It's too hard. It's not necessary, and it will only make you so sore. You just want to be able to learn. You want to be able to sit down the following day. And it's not necessary. It burns guys out. They get started on the program, they're done well, they work really, really hard, and then they quit. Better approach is take a weight that you can do 20 times. In the first workout, do 1 set of 10. Next workout, 1 set of 12, 1 set of 14. So you work it back to 20 very gradually. Or you take that 10 rep weight, this is a weight that I can do 10 times, cut it in half, take 50% of it, and build that gradually. Okay? You don't have to try and be Hercules in 2 weeks.
Right.
Or 2 months.
And the truth of the matter is, I've learned this, and I'm sure that you'll concur. that the body is going to respond. So why give it everything in the first couple of weeks and then you have no place to go after that? If the body is going to respond anyway, give it small increments to respond to.
That's absolutely fair. The beginner workouts, the intermediate workouts, the advanced workouts, it's a progression. And one of the reasons I wrote the book that way is because beginners always start out by trying to do stuff with some things.
Right.
And they don't need it.
Right.
I mean, you can get tremendous results. You can get super results on a very, very simple basic program when you're starting out. And you don't have to work super hard. You don't have to use all the high intensity techniques.
Right.
You save that stuff.
Exactly.
Save that stuff.
It's like if you're dating a girl, you don't give her a diamond ring on the first date. You have no place to go after that. She wants something for you.
For
example, for Valentine's Day, where do you go? It's all about using the smallest effective dose.
That's a very good point.
And so you guys talk about that during the break. So I'm really intrigued by this. Now that I understand what a breathing squat is, and I never did. I've heard about it, but I never heard of it. Now I know what it is. So I'm thinking, okay, I love this squat. I'm strong in my legs, I'm strong in my back. So I'm going to start doing a specialized training program for, let's say, 6 weeks. So then I go into the gym, rack the bar, and just blast off. How many sets of these 20 breathing rep sets do I do?
Well, what you do, you do some warm-up sets. Some people, I'm one of these. is, do the best trainings once a week. Okay. So it varies from person to person. Like, if you want to do your light training once a week, then you've got two other days a week where it's easy to put in some pushing and pulling for the upper body. Or doing some back work, you know, some deadlifts. Lots of different ways to do it. And there's no right or wrong way. The one thing that you do not want to do is you do not want to be doing the squat so often and so heavy and so hard that you start to wear down either your knees or your lower back. And if you're a big proponent of last year recuperation is critical for muscle gains. For strength gains, for muscle gains, you've got to rest, you've got to recuperate. And in my own case, we've had nothing special when I was on the show, I got absolutely tremendous results by training three times a week, training three different workouts, one exercise, one workout, two primary exercises, two different primary exercises in the next workout, and then a third workout where I did another two primary exercises. So I hit each major movement once a week, which allowed a lot of time for rest and recovery, a lot of time for recuperation. Every time I came back, I was stronger. I mean,
that's the mental telling story. If you're coming back stronger, then you know that you have the numbers right before Christmas.
But
we're going to do the last commercial break, and we'll come back with Coach Kevin Perfumic. Stay tuned.
State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anabolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by BestRecovery.com, as well as nominated as Best Pre-Workout Product by Bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Scientists want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anabolic State GT from Bodybuilding.com. That's right. BT at bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
Finally, Bovine supplement right from the source using the original study, Thylacine 347 is here. Bovine analysis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Rupert supplements have done the impossible. Each capsule of Thylacine 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM Bovine analysis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Rupert supplements. Visit rlssupplements.com today. Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. Is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizol, which is the cure to clinical trials and is effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizol works in concert with the rest of the trials of hormone to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of those results is a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Trials are available at bodybuilding.com and the product of all supplements are sold. For more information, check out getds.com. Thank you.
Okay.
tried.
He didn't belong to Cromwell. Well, he wasn't one of the strongest men in the world. He was a keeper of prison culture.
Absolutely.
But in his 80s, he was standing on his head. This, I mean, a lot of people have been on that path. He was like, oh, now try standing on your head. And he used to be completely erect with his head on the ground and his arms bracing next to his head so that he had folded up. And his body would be rigid and standing straight up. In his 80s, but most people in their 80s have to get help getting out of a chair.
And that's still a strength.
Right. I'm not talking about quarterback, try standing on your head.
Yeah, that will teach you something. He didn't train as much on weights, but he did one-line squats.
Really?
What we call Christmas now?
Right.
20 reps.
That's
not like easy.
Yeah. Another proponent, I think it was Michael Doyle who came on, Mike Doyle, who came on my show and we talked about the fact that people live their lives in one way at a time. So this whole idea of you're supposed to be doing two-legged stuff, the leg strength is really a flaw. You really need to train one way to train another as well. What do you think about that?
I'm a bad team. Weightlifters from the 30s and 40s have been what we call a split style of lifting, where instead of heaving the bar overhead and squatting underneath it, you would go in a split. But just sort of that unilateral movement that you're talking about, now a lot of those people, they were really, really strong and powerful.
And those
split
people,
there were people who were doing that, in the 40s, who are still doing competitive weightlifting, Olympic weightlifting on the master's level, and are still doing that,
a few minutes before the show is over, on the cover of Falcon Sweat, who's that picture?
John Higgs.
And what is he lifting?
He's lifting the Kaplan wheels, which were a set of railroad wheels used by a French farm man called Kaplan during the 20th century. 2-inch thick handle, now revolving, of course, because it's a railway.
And the way it's not revolving, people need to understand how difficult that makes a lift.
Because
you don't realize that when you're lifting weight at the gym, the fact that those plates can revolve even a quarter of an inch takes the torque out of the bar. So you have more of that torque in your hands.
Absolutely.
You're not fighting against gravity at that point, you're not fighting against torque.
Absolutely. It makes a huge difference. The 2-inch handle makes a huge difference, and the weight on this little monster is 365 pounds. And John Davis, who was a world and two-time Olympic gold medalist in the United States, John Davis claimed it, that is to say, he lifted it up to his chest, and then he jerked it.
So he got it over and around, he lifted it from the platform.
He did.
Which means he had to pull it to the ground. When you're doing a deadlift, your feet is wrapped around the bar.
Mm-hmm.
It goes up to the bar. Maybe an inch in diameter.
Okay,
so that means that you know how hard it is to grab something when your hand is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
You're at a disadvantage. So he lifted 355 pounds from the ground to his shoulders first using that wide open hand grip.
But it's crazier than that because Davis even really had tremendous gripping strength. Very strong hands, very small hands. But it was really hard for him to hold on. So what he had to do was use a reverse grip, one hand facing up, one hand facing down. He heaved the bar up.
He cradled the bar up.
He heaved it up, let go. This was the end. Switch hands to an undergrip.
With 365 pounds.
Yeah, it's not really. You can find it. I have a blog on my website, the Madison Training blog, and I put up a link.
What's the website?
Go to the blog, Bouncer Training blog, and search for John Davis. And I think that link is still up.
That is insane.
It is nuts, yeah.
Oh my god, just think about it. So the bar is moving upward. He jumps it so hard that the bar is moving upward on its own. And when the bar is floating in the air, he changes grips.
Yeah. You see it. The bar just keeps going up. And he lets go and catches it underneath. I think of those two, think of the courage that it took to do that. That's 365
pounds. You have to know to have the confidence that you can actually do it.
Yeah.
And here he is pushing the bar over on the cover. You
just about to start clapping. On the other hand, you know what I was talking about the old timers? They were very, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, they were very nice to talk about this trip. Some of these guys would show up at these events, but basically, with their trousers and belt, take their shoes off and just be shirtless, and they would lift weights. And then put their shirts back on and their shoes, and they get more deep into the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. And John Davis would walk up to make a championship match and back down this time. Kim Dunn.
Really?
Yeah. And yet, he was literally, in his area, he was the strongest man in the world.
What was he called?
Yeah.
Hey! Yeah, right. Yeah. That's wonderful. We're happy to hear about it. More people from Brooklyn who love from Brooklyn. Well, it's a really great book. I read it last night. I had a book to adopt some of these workouts myself. You can get a copy of it at bookscubic.com, BROOKSKUBIC.com. You can also go to Brooks' website, Leader's Blog. Got lots of good information there. Really, Brooks is one of the few people who are still keeping physical culture and his current sense alive and keeping these names out there. You know, John, we're going to hear these people talk about magazines today. And these are the people who led the charge. These are the guys who made it all happen. We're following something like religion. These are the disciples. These are the guys in the beginning that started doing all the things that we basically do without understanding why we do it today. Go to BrooksCubic.com to learn more. Pick up the book. We'll have Brooks back on real soon to talk about specialized doctrine. Thanks for being on the show today, Brooks.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll see everybody on Monday.
I'm going to go to the next one.